Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Where we have a sober conversation around our needs to build a global economic cooperative to serve the needs of people of African ancestry to achieve economic self-determination and sovereignty. Stay with us this evening as we discuss time for a new economics.
Will you give up your rhythm?
Once again, welcome. Welcome to Dare to Win. This is the regular Thursday night radio broadcast for Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC. Dare to Win. And yes, we are the drum, calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of our people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and contribute to our wholeness. To join the conversation this evening, call 929-477-2789. And then press the number 1 on your keypad if you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you want to join us via your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com and then click the Ulu Radio tab and then click on Listen Live. My name is Sister Nanana, and I am your host for this evening's discussion. And as always, I am just so pleased and happy to have the opportunity to share some really stimulating dialogue with you this evening. And joining us this evening, we have Brother Kimbizi, who is also an Ulu board member. And he's going to be leading us through our topic this evening, which is time for a new economics. Would you care to greet our listening audience, Brother Kimbizi?
Good evening, Sister Nanana, and good evening to the Ulu audience tonight. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to share the airwaves with you and with the family. We are indeed living in some very exciting times. I would dare say pregnant times. And so I think we have a good topic lined up for tonight, and I'm eager to jump into it.
Wonderful. It truly is going to be exciting, and it's going to be have a little bit of a different twist to it. So I'm excited about having this discussion also about it really is time. It is time for a new economics. But before we get into that subject, Brother Kimbizi, I'm just going to take a moment to remind our listeners about the 7th annual Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative annual members meeting and convention being held in Atlanta March 13th, 14th, and 15th. So for all Us Lifting Us members, this is the time for you to show up and be present and be counted at your annual meeting, where you will have the opportunity to vote on some very important and timely topics. We will be having board elections, and we will be sharing some information about how we are moving forward together on this journey to achieve a new economy. And that is the theme for this year, Forward Together. The members' meeting and the convention is being held at the Franklin Auditorium of the Interdenominational Theological Center. That's at 700 Martin Luther King Drive in Atlanta. And that's part of the Spelman and Morehouse Center there in Atlanta. So all three of our activities will be held there. On the 13th, we start in the evening, 6 p.m. in the evening, with a meet and greet. It is an informal social event, and the public is invited to attend the meet and greet on the 13th. On the 14th, we have our members-only meeting, and that is the meeting where we discuss some hardcore business about what's going on with Ulu, our financial status, and looking at what we're planning for the future. And then on the 15th, we continue in our convention mode, actually pulling in input from the members about what they want to see going forward in the future, and also some other important timely topics we'll be talking about. So this is the 7th annual meeting. So please do attend. We're looking forward to seeing as many Ulu members there as possible. So with that said, Brother Kimbizi, let's move forward with talking about time for a new economics. So I'm going to ask you if you would please get us started, Brother Kimbizi, with giving us some context and some background, kind of set the stage for us as far as what this new economics, what is that all about?
Thank you, Sister Nanana. Perhaps the best way to get into the conversation tonight is to look at what's happening on the national political stage, particularly with the Democratic nomination process going full bore, with the recent debates that have been held, and when with Bernie Sanders having surged to the forefront as the leading Democratic candidate for president, the topic of socialism is dominating the news. Bernie's candidacy is forcing a national conversation about what is socialism and is socialism better than capitalism for America. It strikes me that as the billionaire class and their hirelings become hysterical at the prospect of Americans really learning about the economic system of America, the Democratic debate, for example, the other night turned into a circus, a propaganda expo to hide and confuse the issues that really need to be discussed. I want to be crystal clear. The race for the presidency in 2020 is about which economic system should guide America going forward. Now, you'll notice that all the conversation has to do with Medicare for all, has to do with free education at the college level,
mm-hmm.
has to do with the Green New Deal. All of these policy issues are in the air, and who can best represent the Democratic Party? And also, we must keep tabs on the fact that it's real clear that whoever the Democratic nominee is, if they can't appeal to black voters, they don't have a chance. So that's why the South Carolina primary is front and center on the conversation. Who is it that black folks will get behind? Because whoever that is, if they can't excite black voters, then the Democrats are dead in the water. And it's tragic that in all the conversations that's going on about Bloomberg or Stara or Biden or Warren or Bernie Sanders, no one has raised the fact that what's the reason that they are afraid of Sanders is because he's standing up for democratic socialism. And nobody on that stage wants to have a conversation about socialism. So the question is, when we see, for example, that the billionaire class is so nervous that they've got three candidates trying to beat down the Democratic Socialists. You got Bloomberg, you got Styra, all vying, and of course running against Trump. So the billionaire class doesn't even trust the politicians anymore to run the country. They think they have to get in there and do it themselves. So a working person, obviously, and a poor person could never compete in this race. The 1% are definitely revealing their dominance over American society and their decision to maintain that dominance. So let me just pause there for a moment, Sister Nanana, and let you ask some questions.
Wow. Yeah, you have provided such a rich context for having this entire discussion, and I agree with you 100% that this whole subject of quote-unquote democratic socialism is really at the core, and the Republicans are working very hard, as well as the some Democrats, as you pointed out, to nobody wants to hear what Sanders has to say. And from my perspective, he's hitting the nail on the head. So, and this is an exciting subject, as I can see from looking at our call-in board. We have questions already, folks who are indicating that they either want to make a comment or ask a question. So I do want to acknowledge that questions are waiting, and I will get to opening those mics in just a moment. I'm just going to ask one more basic piece here before we entertain any questions, Brother Kambizi, and that is something that I think is really important for us to have some solid information on as we move forward. And that is, what is capitalism and what is socialism? I think we need to have a good clear definition, and then perhaps we can move forward with some other dialogue. So could you help us out on both of those with a definition, please?
Certainly. And I want to offer a very simple definition of both of these terms so that we don't get confused with the extraneous stuff that goes along with that. So, first of all, to your question, what is capitalism? Capitalism is an economic system based on the private ownership of the means of production and the operation for maximum profit. Let me say that again. Capitalism is an economic system based on the private ownership of the means of production and their operation for maximum profit. What is socialism? Socialism is an economic system where the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. And I think, Sister Nana, this is where the conversation always goes off the rail. When they ask about socialism, they start talking about Stalin in Russia. They start pulling up names and getting hysterical. This is not good for America. At the root of this debate is whether or not the means of production should be privately owned as they are under capitalism and used for maximum profit, or should they be publicly owned and used for the benefit of society? How often have you heard that the question put in those terms? I have never heard that explanation given. And if you look on the news, whether it's CBS or NBC or CNN, the only conversations that they're having are about which policy and which personality can beat Trump. And in other words, beating Trump is the mantra that they have forced down our throats for the last 9 months. Beating Trump is not the main problem. The opportunity that is set before the American people right now is the possibility of changing economic models. That's the opportunity that we're looking at, to get out from under the private ownership and control of the means of production. And let me just pause here right now and say, when you hear the term means of production, what are we talking about? We're talking about land. We're talking about natural resources, energy. We're talking about factories. We're talking about the technology. And we're talking about labor. All of those constitute the means of production. And I think it was Almacar Cabral who said that people only attain national liberation when they have freed all of the productive forces from foreign domination. So in other words, people, in order to be really liberated and to be really free, they must control the means of production. And what socialism is arguing for is that as long as the means of production are privately controlled, then the people remain dominated and exploited. What socialism is pushing for is the public ownership of the means of production. And so that becomes critical, because it's interesting when we think about the formation of the United States. Slavery was in place before the country was formed. Slavery begins in the United States as early as the late 1500s and 1600s and on through 1700 and 1800. The country doesn't get formed until 1789. So slavery has been the mode of production for almost 100 years before the country is even formed. And that is why the documents that then they tout. How does that go? This is the land of the free, the home of the brave. We believe that all men are created free and equal, and are you know, have certain inalienable rights, the, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, how can that really mean anything when you've got several hundred thousand people who are enslaved? So obviously they weren't talking about enslaved Africans when the country was formed. And so the private ownership of the economy is what's strangling this country, and quiet as it's kept, the world. And the way that we finally have the opportunity to break out of that is to gain public control over those economic instruments. I'll pause there. There may be some questions.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for that explanation. I believe that that sheds some very much needed clarity. And you've brought out some excellent points as far as understanding socialism and private versus public ownership of the means of production. Very, very key. And yes, we do have a caller who has a question. So let's go ahead and take that question before we move further. 6405, your mic is open. Please give us your name and where you're calling from.
Greetings. Greetings.
Yes. Yes, greetings, greetings. Good evening, yes. Brother. Please give us your name and let us know where you're calling from.
I'm Ernst Ford in Philadelphia, and I saw the announcement on Facebook, and I decided to dial the number and listen. So far, I'm enjoying the program.
Well, wonderful, and thank you for joining us. We appreciate that, and it's good for us to know that the word that we're putting out on social media, that people are seeing that and tuning in.
Thank you.
So thank you. Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to proceed with our dialogue here. And Brother Kambizi, do you want to go a little, or would you please go a little bit deeper into this subject of capitalism and socialism, and give us some more background, some more nuts and bolts into really understanding the core of what we're dealing with?
Well, thank you, Sister Nanana, and welcome to the brother. We're glad to have you in the listening audience this evening. And I just, before I move to the next point, I just want to stress again that the political arrangement of a society rests on the economic base. So if you want to know whether or not a group of people have independence and freedom, you have to see what's going on in the economic base. And so, again, if the economy is owned and controlled by private parties, then that's about all the democracy that you're going to get. And that democracy is limited to the owners of these instruments of production. But it's interesting. I was doing a word study, Sister Nanana, and I wanted to understand the etymology of the word capitalism. Etymology just means a study of the origin of words. And when we look at the etymology of capitalism, we find that it is derived from the word capital, which evolved from a late Latin word based on caput, C-A-P-U-T, meaning head. H-E-A-D. Now, why that gets interesting is because that same root word is the same root word of the word chattel and cattle. In other words, chattel and cattle in the sense of being movable property. And so what we really are talking about when we talk about capitalism is the private ownership and control of movable property. In other words, black people will recall that American slavery system was a system of chattel slavery, where the humanity of African people was reduced to that of property. When we started being called chattel, we no longer were considered human. We could be sold, we could be bought, we could be bred, we could be tortured, we could be raped, we could be worked to death. Because we were no longer human, we did not have a spirit, we did not have a soul, we were strictly property. And the deadly thing about that, I think, Sister Nanana, is if we are honest with ourselves, we have not shaken off the designation of chattel even until today. I guess we could say that African people were chattelized or capitalized by capitalism. So as long as we are under capitalism, there will always be a need for a Black Lives Matter movement. Because under the capitalist system, just keep in mind, our designation for more years of what, the 100 years before the country was formed, and then another 80 years after the country was formed, we were chattel. We were movable property owned by the slave owners. And that is why we struggle today to validate our worth as human beings. We still haven't thrown off or shaken off the designation of chattel, even though we would like to think we have. But it's interesting, even in the Dred Scott decision of 1857, the Supreme Court ruled that black folks have no rights that white people are bound to honor because we were chattel. So let's shift gears and look at when we do a study of the word socialism. In other words, when we look up the etymology of socialism, we find its origin is the French word social. And Webster defines this as of or relating to human society, the interaction of the individual and the group, or the welfare of human beings as members of the society. Webster goes on to say, social means tending to form cooperative and interdependent relationships with others. So I'll just ask the listening audience, if you weigh these two very different concepts, these two very different economic models, one that has put us in the category of chattel and has treated us as movable property, the other system that talks about where we are forming cooperative relationships and interdependent relationships as we provide for food, clothing, and shelter for ourselves, which seems to be more beneficial to people of African descent, to the marginalized people, to poor people and working people? It would seem to me that a system that pushes us towards interdependence and to cooperation would be a superior model to a system that designates people as property. That's just my take. Maybe people see it differently, Sister Nana. So I'll pause. There may be some other reactions or questions.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, you have really set the stage and given us a great foundation to start this whole dialogue around a new economics. before you can go on to something new, I judge that you truly need to understand where you are right now, because that positioning and understanding your starting point helps you to determine what steps you're going to take to move, to make progress. So I judge that having this distinction between capitalism and socialism, understanding the stage that we are involved in right now with the upcoming election, and our current status as people of Black African descent in this country, having been identified as chattel, all of that is vital.
I need to throw in one more point, Sister Nanana. We said that capitalism is this system of private ownership for production of profit, maximum profit. The other piece that all people who work for a living in capitalist countries, and certainly America is in that group, the profits that the economy generates are the product of the synergy of all the people who produce that surplus value. And I don't think people fully grasp what I'm saying. In other words, you go to work for a company like, let's just say, General Motors, and you walk in the door and they hire you in and they say, we're going to start you at $10 an hour. And you think to yourself, well, okay, great. Or let's just say they offer you $15 an hour, so it's a quote-unquote a livable wage. And you say, very good. What you as the worker in selling your labor to the corporation fail to understand is that the money that is produced when all the cars are sold, they're going to subtract your wage from the total. They subtract the cost of the factory and the machinery and the raw materials, and what is left are the profits. The owners claim the profit for themselves, and that is always hundreds of times more than the wages of the people who did the work. So that as long as we are in that contractual arrangement where the profit goes to the owners, and the workers are left only with the wage, what we have not understood is that the profits are generated from the money that should have been paid to the workers, or at the very least should have been distributed more evenly among the workers, because if the workers don't do the work, there are no profits. The factory in and of itself doesn't produce any profit. The machines in and of themselves don't do produce any profit. The raw materials sitting on the loading dock don't produce any profit. It is only when the workers put their hands to the equipment and do their labor, that input produces a product that then has embedded in the product surplus value or profit. And so by right, the workers have a claim on that profit, but under the system they tell us, no, we took the risk, so the profits belong to us. You signed the contract, you agreed to work for the $15 an hour, here's your $15 an hour wage, go on your way, and don't make a fuss. And that is the theft component of the capitalist system. Now under slavery it was even worse than that. You know, there was no $15 an hour. You just you worked, or they beat you to death. But
exactly.
The profits in this system accrue to the owners. That's theft. Under the socialist model, the workers also are paid their salary, and they participate in the distribution of the profits, and that is what keeps the playing field level. It eliminates this huge income inequality, and it allows the whole society to be sustainable and to run in a more balanced way. And so that's the other piece that has to be part of that conversation. And I'll pause there, sister.
Okay, great. Wow. That's a lot to think about and to digest for most of us, because this is a different perspective that we have never really examined and been forced to take a look at. So I'm going to say let's take a music break right now and stick and stay with us for the next half of our program. Thank you.
This is headlining from Arrested Development, and I come here tonight to give thanks to the rain. So brothers and sisters, please put down your umbrellas. You won't be needing those today. Look to the clouds with the most rain coming from it. For without the rain, there's no me and there's no you. I said a drip drop, a drip drop, drip drop. Body be bum 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 bum. Drip drop. Let it rain, let God's water feed me. The water of life, mentally rinsing me. Physically drenching me, most of frowning upon your arrival, but I need you for survival. And when you fall in my community, yeah, I run outside to properly greet you. Let it rain, take my pain, I'm glad to meet you. Fill my eyes with a colorful rainbow. Every drop that hits me fills me with unimaginable amount of security. Knowing my God acknowledges me as this each drop of rain is aimed toward me. My Lord, thanks for life. My Lord, thanks for life.
Thank you,
yeah.
My rain.
It's raining revolution. It's raining solution. It's raining revolution. 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 Struggle through the ghetto. The rain, the time I feel is mental. The goal of this rain I feel is spiritual. Saw through the eyes of the afflicted people. The eyes are hard as a million tombstones. Marked with the names of the millions of kin thrown to the dust that gave them their color skin. Fades to black is the scene they're embalmed in. The rain many nights have witnessed her, receiving the sperm of a brother into a sister, and blessing that life to guarantee existence, a conscious baby for a black resistance. I feel the rain enhances the revolution, it reminds us of a spiritual solution, it reminds us of...
All right, yes, it is raining revolution. It certainly is time for a change. And what we're talking about this evening is... time for a new economics. And we're having that discussion with Brother Kimbizi, a board member of Us Lifting Us. And I'm your host this evening, Sister Nanana. And I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to be a part of this really very eye-opening dialogue that we're having this evening. So, continuing with our discussion, Brother Kimbizi, we have explored the differences between capitalism and socialism, which provided really a stark contrast between private ownership of the means of production and public ownership or control of the means of production. So hopefully we have that as a clear foundation now. So why is this difference of critical importance, in particularly now in 2020? Brother Kimbizi, take us a little further into this dialogue. Why is this of such importance to us at this point in time?
Well, thank you, Sister Nanana. And I'm looking at the clock. And so I want to shift around a little bit and answer that question by first of all mentioning to people, when we talk about this time for a new economy and talking about a system of economics where the means of production are publicly owned and controlled as a solution for us, particularly as African, as people of African ancestry. And I want to shift and talk about the need for building African cooperatives. Most of us who go through the National Football League season are aware of a team called the Green Bay Packers. What many of us do not understand or know is that the Green Bay Packers are publicly owned by the city of Green Bay. It's a cooperative. It's a nonprofit, mm-hmm. publicly owned and controlled franchise. And as a result of the city of Green Bay owning that franchise, even though in the entire National Football League, the Green Bay TV market is the smallest market of all the teams, and imagine a team that has been as successful as the Green Bay Packers, they would have left Green Bay long time ago for a much bigger market. But because that team is publicly owned by the city of Green Bay, it has remained in the city of Green Bay since it was organized, I think, in 1926. So a lot of times when people hear publicly owned and controlled businesses or institutions, they can't fathom what that would look like. All you have to do is look at the Green Bay Packers. The thing that's interesting about them, Sister Nanana, is that they are the mm-hmm. only team in the National Football League that is operated that way. The National Football League changed their operating rules, I think, in 1983, stipulating that no football franchise could be owned by more than 32 owners. And one of those owners had to own like a third of the franchise. In other words, they did not want publicly owned franchises in the National Football League system. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Another cooperative that people may not realize, and I want to thank Baba Hakima for making me aware of this, is that you see Ace Hardware stores around, at least they're here in Atlanta. Ace Hardware, for example, is a mm-hmm. retailer cooperative. So all of those franchisees, they own collectively Ace Hardware, and they benefit collectively from that cooperative ownership of that national chain. And I think they did their revenue is in the hundreds of millions of dollars, big operation. So this idea of public ownership, of transferring the ownership of the means of production to the hands of the workers and the majority of the citizens, is not far fetched. It's not radical. It doesn't wreck the economy. It is a very viable way of redistributing the resources and the wealth that these businesses generate, rather than pouring all that wealth into the hands of just a few millionaires and billionaires, the 1%, they are able to redistribute that wealth so that multiple people, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, benefit from the wealth that organization is creating. So I just wanted to offer those two examples to say that this is a viable proposal that Us Lifting Us is making available to our community. We are arguing that the historical moment is pregnant right now for us to launch a global African cooperative enterprise that we own and control, and that allows us to provide for our own food, clothing, shelter, energy, and whatever other needs that we have as a community.
Those are great examples. The Green Bay Packers and the Ace Hardware, those are names that almost everyone can immediately identify with. So thank you for those examples. Sorry, didn't mean to stop your train of thought. But yeah, that's very impactful.
Yes, and so here's where we find ourselves in 2020, Sister Nanana.
Okay.
We have, as a people, $1.3 trillion flowing through our hands every year. $1.3 trillion. The argument that Us Lifting Us is making is let's take a small portion of that $1.3 trillion and put it in a pool and use that pool of money to open cooperative businesses that we own and control. Now, the point I was getting ready to make just before you raised your other concern, Sister Nanana, was that when we build these institutions, these economic enterprises, we, in effect, have transferred control of the means of production into our own hands. That's what has me so excited to live in this moment in our history. We have the capacity to build institutions that give us control over the means of production. That is freedom. That is genuine freedom. Mm-hmm. And it is also democracy, because what we in Us Lifting Us practice, no matter how many units that you purchase as part of your equity position in Us Lifting Us, and what I mean by that is the annual membership fee is $50. So everyone pays $50 annually as a membership fee that helps us to offset administrative costs. In addition, when people are able, and as soon as they are able, we purchase a co-op unit, which is $1,000. So for every 1,000 members who purchase a co-op unit for $1,000, that equals $1 million. It is that pool of money that then allows us to set up cooperative businesses. So let's just say, for example, Sister Nanana, you come into Us Lifting Us and you purchase a co-op unit, right? And okay. I've been in Us Lifting Us for a couple of years, and I own 5 co-op units, right?
Mm-hmm.
We come to the annual meeting that you announced at the beginning of the broadcast, March 13th, 14th, and 15th, here in Atlanta at the Interdenominational Theological Center. And policy questions are on the floor for a vote. You as a member and I as a member, we each have one vote. Now, even though I own 5 units and you only own 1 unit, we still only have one vote. Now, if this was a capitalist corporation, the number of votes is determined by the number of shares that each member owns. So if this was a capitalistic corporation, you would have one vote and I would have 5 votes. You see the difference? So Us is truly democratic. One member, one vote. And when we gather for our annual meetings and we have to conduct business and make decisions, if there's 1,000 members in the organization, each member has one vote. And that's how we make decisions as to what the company needs to do. If the economic system is undemocratic, then everything else about the society will be undemocratic. And so that is why with all of this charade going on around who will be the Democratic nominee and who can win and who can beat Donald Trump, none of that really matters, because behind the scenes, the billionaires are determining who the candidates will be anyway. And they're funding the campaign that they ultimately want to win, because the corporations are non-democratic. For example, when General Motors made the decision that it wanted to close some plants, it didn't ask their workers, did they think that was a good idea? They just closed the plants and put those people out on the street. A cooperative would not have done that, because the workers would have been members of the cooperative, and they would have said, no, let's find another way to keep the plant open so we can continue to generate our incomes and support our families. which is really the logical position to take. So,
and it sounds to me from what you're saying and from what you've laid out for us, that Us Lifting Us has a plan, has a blueprint, has not only a roadmap, but has an actual process that is already up and running and working and in place for us to achieve ownership of our efforts through purchasing the shares in ULU.
That's correct.
I
need to put this in just so people listening and our members understand what Us Lifting Us is structure. When the members come in, they kind of fill in the bricks and the mortar and the other aspects of the business. In other words, ULU is not finished. It is a framework that allows us to come together as a community and it creates the space where we can sit down and dialogue, do the research, form an analysis, and then figure out the best way to go, and then use this vehicle to help us get there. So you're right.
Mm-hmm.
It is a blueprint. It does point us in a certain direction, but it is a vehicle like a car or a bus. It takes all of the passengers inside of it to figure out where we need to go. It'll get us wherever we decide to go, but the decision-making process is something that is done by the members and at the annual meeting, and that's why we hope that as many of our members as possible will come to the meeting in Atlanta because we have a lot of business on the table that we have to make decisions about.
Well, and I truly appreciate what you're saying as far as ULU providing the framework and that the members are the ones in the cooperative environment who actually do the work to move the engine forward, to make the engine go round and round, to produce the results and the profits, that what's needed is everyone putting their shoulder to the wheel, so to speak, and providing input, providing their skills and their talent to make the process work. But the framework is there. The guideline is there to follow. So it's contributions from everyone that's involved that really make the difference in a cooperative environment. And I can't help but think that it also provides an opportunity for us to have something that most of us already know is really vital to our survival as a nation of people, and that is it provides us cooperative economics, I judge, provides us with a framework and a basis for unity. That is, you know, an economic environment, I judge, is the one thing that we can really rally around and unify ourselves around, and that we can all be committed to and constantly work towards keeping it going and passing it on to future generations. So I see that there's lots of benefit in participating in a cooperative economic structure.
You make
what
such
I'm
a,
seeing.
Such a vital point, Sister Nananam. I just want to lift it up to make sure that everyone heard that. Us Lifting Us, when we first started, we said this represented a new economic paradigm. And it's a whole other way of looking at the world and behaving in the world. To your point about Us Lifting Us being a framework and the members coming inside of that and doing the work, making the wheels go round, that's the key. The beautiful thing about a cooperative is it takes many hands to make the engine run. And it's the combined energy of all of us pulling in the same direction that allows us to write our own history, to chart our own destiny. This is not a spectator organization where you sit on the sidelines and kind of watch it. This is a process that involves all of us being shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, helping each other, serving one another, and then enjoying the benefits collectively, ourselves, mm-hmm. our children, and future generations. So I'm glad you raised that point, because it's very important that those who say, yeah, this is something that I want to be a part of, when they come in, not only are you putting your money in the pool, you're jumping in the pool with your money to help us do all of the various assignments and tasks that have to get done.
You make a very good point that this is really a hands-on process, that there are no spectators. You absolutely, in a cooperative economic environment, you absolutely cannot sit back and be a spectator. I mean, you can try to do that, but you certainly won't benefit as much. And when you truly understand how the cooperative economic process works and what makes, what cranks that wheel to make it go round, and it's the energy and the intelligence of all of us, then it, in a way, it encourages you and makes you want to be and be proud to be a part of the whole process. So, you know, Brother Kimbizi, I judge that this subject that we're talking about this evening is one that we should address again, that we need to continue to keep in front of not only our listening audience, but also those who are members of Us Lifting Us. It's great from an educational standpoint, as well as from the standpoint of reminding us of what it is that we're really about with ULU. So I thank you, and I appreciate that you've been with us this evening and that you've shared your time and your knowledge and your expertise with us. And as we're winding down here, I just want to remind our listening audience and our members out there that the seventh annual Us Lifting Us Members Meeting and Convention is being held in Atlanta, March 13th, 14th, and 15th. You can go to the website, www.usliftingus.com, to get more information and to register and participate in our annual meeting and convention. And as Brother Kimbizi said, we are going to be tackling some really major topics at this particular meeting. And so we need to have people to show up and be present and to participate. Once again, thank you, Brother Kimbizi, for joining us. We appreciate having you, and look forward to having you on again in the future when we'll talk about this subject once again. A new,
well, thank you, Sister Nanana, with my pleasure.
Economy. Thank you.
We will lift every voice and say,
we are gonna make it all through.
Ooh. So many before us.